These ain't your daddy's mutants. Except for when they're very, very similar to the ones your daddy probably would have seen sometime in his life, either reading comic books or watching X-Men movies. And you're listening to the Dare Daniel podcast, where you send us your most sinister movie dares, and we suffer the consequences for your amusement. I'm Corky McDonald, and within all of us, there are at least two boars. One of those boars is this movie. With me, as always, film critic Daniel Bards.
Hi, everyone. On this show, we do your dirty work by watching the most unwatchable movies you can imagine, and then we review and rate them using our unique system. Run-of-the-mill bad film, we give that a dare. Double dare rating goes to the truly atrocious movies and the hallowed, worldwide, respected, renowned, validated, a million times over reverse dare rating is for those despised movies that are actually pretty good.
Today on the podcast, we're reviewing Josh Boone's long-delayed franchise non-starter, The New Mutants. We're also going to read some movie dares sent in by our listeners. But before we get started, we'll be talking about the drinks we're drinking this Easter Sunday.
It's Easter Sunday. Quirky, do you not have an alcoholic beverage?
I do have an alcoholic beverage. I have an alcoholic beverage in my copper cup.
Wow. That is fancy schmancy. What do you got there?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about it.
I like to tie my drinks to the show.
Sure.
And today I am drinking a Moscow Mule.
Oh, beautiful.
Because a mule could speak with a better Moscow accent than Anya Taylor-Joy.
Was she supposed to be Russian? I couldn't tell. Her last name is Rasputin.
Yeah. Was she? I wasn't sure.
It's a subtle film. Corky, I have yet another craft spirit. If you've been listening to the show the last few months, you know I've been getting more into the craft spirits. And by now you're probably thinking, Barnyard, he's one of those whiskey snob types, right? Right. Well, how dare you? How dare you? I'm an all kind of things type snob, all right, pal? Do not limit me, especially when it comes to alcoholic beverages, sir or madam.
It's safe to say you are the Rasputin of snobbery.
Absolutely. I literally challenge all of you to a duel. Did Rasputin ever do that? Doesn't matter. Today, Quirky, I'm actually drinking some locally made rum. I am drinking Twin Mischief Rum from Patio 29 Distillery in Winters.
Mm.
Made with local ingredients, it is 45% alcohol, distilled from premium molasses and cane sugar, and then spends at least 6 months in barrels that previously contained their bourbon whiskey. So it has that kind of character to it as well.
Quaffing.
Oh, yeah, that's fun. That's just fun. very vanilla-y, very bready, kind of fruity. It's fantastic. I've also made a cocktail. I've made a rum old-fashioned.
Mm.
Works either way. Works as a sipping rum, but it's also really great in a cocktail.
That looks fantastic. After I kick this mule to the curb, I might have to make myself one of those.
There you go. Patio 29 out of Winners. So go and check them out. You can get it delivered to your house. That's how I got this. I got their bourbon as well, which is also quite good. So now let's read this week's dare. Of course, our listeners are sending these dares to us, these movie dares. It's the whole basis of the show. You dare us to watch the movies, right? I mean, it's like the whole concept of the whole thing. You're sending them to us through conventional means. You're sending them to us through unconventional means. You're sending it to us on the Schmied, which is our shortening of social media, which has just saved so much time. Just so much. This week's dare comes to us from Carolyn. What do you got for us, Carolyn? She's got Ava. Ava.
Mm.
This is a 2020 palindrome directed by Tate Taylor. Stars Jessica Chastain, John Malkovich, and Common.
Almost a palindrome.
What? Close. If it was Kamak. So close.
I was thinking
and if Malkovich was Malkaclam. I just, what? Yeah, so close. Why did you want us to watch this, Carolyn? She says, Friday night, I took some shrooms and listened to live DJ feeds of industrial music. Jelly. So jelly. I'm pretty sure this movie's soundtrack was curated by the same DJs, but alas, I had to suffer through this sober. Sadly, the soundtrack is one of the least atrocious aspects of the movie. You can just hear the pitch. She's an assassin, but she's a recovering addict, and she goes off script with her targets, and now the hit is on her. Oh, and she's making trips home to the family she's been alienated from for 10 years in the middle of all this. And we're going to pack it into an hour and a half with aggressive editing that warrants a seizure warning. Not only did this pitch work, but they got a solid cast. Fun drinking game. Every time Ava's handler, played by John Malkovich, refers to management. that is just such a trope now, right? Like, right. Point Blank 67 kind of does that a little bit of, like, the crime is a business. Like, yeah. It's a literal business, you know? Oh, boy, it's tired by now. It's whole, really tired by
that's now. John Wick's whole shit now is the bureaucracy of assassinating.
IMDb synopsis of Ava. Ava is a deadly assassin who works for a black ops organization traveling the globe specializing in high-profile hits. When a job goes dangerously wrong, she is forced to fight for her own survival. And Carolyn just became a new monthly donor. So hey! Thank you very much, Carolyn. And of course, that sends your dare right to the top of the pile. If you want to do this or whatever you want to do, just hit us up. And if anyone else wants to donate to the show, you can make a one-time donation. You can make a monthly donation. Go to daredaniel.com. There is, I think, a make a donation button on the side there and somewhere in the menu. So click those, go to our PayPal, drop a little coin, and we'll do whatever the hell you want us to.
Shrooms and listen to industrial music, too, if you want to dare us that.
That's my bag.
And now, our feature presentation.
The New Mutants. This was dared to us by monthly donor Matthew Barnes.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, speaking of which, I mean, Matthew, monthly donor. And you know what? I actually went back and looked. Matthew, back in like 2019, became our first monthly donor. I believe he made the first actual donation to the podcast. So thank you so much, Matt. Long overdue. We did do A Christmas Story 2, which was one of his dares way back in the day.
Going off that dare, that horrific, atrocious, abysmal dare, I think we sufficiently spaced enough time to attempt. It
took us a while. Ugh. It took us a while to get back to you. But here we are.
We've been hurt, Matthew. Mutants.
Big time.
Why did Matthew Barnes dare us the New Mutants? He says, if nothing else, to get Dan to see another Marvel movie. I saw this at the drive-in when indoor theaters were closed. It's always hard to see what's happening on the screen from inside my car, but I don't think an indoor theater would have helped. This movie with several release dates features several different genres. Marvel action flick, horror flick, young adult romance flick, and succeeds at none of them. IMDb synopsis for this movie. 5 young mutants, just discovering their abilities while held in a secret facility against their will, fight to escape their past sins and save themselves.
Yes, the New Mutants! Where these New Mutants come from? I want my old mutants.
All these New Mutants these days.
Hercules Schmercules, there's New Mutants here.
I just want my dough.
Yes, the New Mutants. Based on the Marvel Comics series, it is also the 13th and final entry in the X-Men film series. Just a moment of silence for all of that nonsense. Very good. Directed and co-written by Josh Boone, who had previously made The Fault in Our Stars.
Ah, that explains a lot.
Yeah, right? And yet explains nothing. Yeah. Stars Blue Hunt, Maisie Williams, Anya Taylor-Joy, Charlie Heaton, Alice Braga, and Henry Zaga. There's a Braga and a Zaga.
And CGI.
That's a lot of CGI. The film had a somewhat troubled production and an extremely troubled post-production. It was shot in the summer of 2017 at Medfield State Hospital in Boston. It was aiming for an April 2018 release date. However, that date was endlessly delayed due to planned reshoots that never happened, due to Fox's ever-evolving demands on the filmmakers, and due to holdups over Disney's acquisition of Fox. This is like the movie nobody wanted. And that sense of neglect is palpable.
Do we know for sure that those reshoots never happened?
They never happened, as far as I can tell. This was like it started as, we're going to do just some pickups, which are just very simple. It's not reshoots, really. It's just kind of fill-in type shots. Then it was, no, we're going to really just remake this whole movie as a horror movie, which is what they wanted to make in the first place. And then it was just delayed, delayed, delayed. And then it got to be 3 years where we finally get to release the movie. It's like, everyone's older now. they don't even look the same.
And they just released the movie that they hated and delayed the whole time. So it's finally like, you know what? Fuck this. It sucks. The world sucks right now.
Dumped into theaters on August 28, 2020, in the middle of the pandemic. And just as theaters very briefly reopened, like here in Sacramento, I think it was just the drive-ins, as Matthew said. Without much competition, it did slightly better than expected. It did open at number one, but it only grossed $23 million in North America, $46 million worldwide, against a budget of $70 to $80 million. Critics also not impressed, 35 on Rotten Tomatoes, 43 on Metacritic. Of course, it had its defenders. It always does. Matthew Monagle of the Playlist said, quote, "If New Mutants is any indication, the future is bright for young adult horror," end quote. However, Tim Grierson of Screen Daily argued, quote, "The New Mutants' greatest failing is that even as a spinoff, its drama is puny and its spectacle non-existent." Corky.
Yeah.
We have been doing the show for over 3 years now.
Holy
that's
cow.
Like, that's an actual thing. Like, yeah. It's over 3 years we've had. We are in year four. So I feel like I've gotten to know you pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know, as you do, that you physically attack anyone who disagrees with you because you are controlled by fear bears.
You know me so well.
I know this. You know this. Not many other people know this. Secret's out. So who, in this case, do you fight? Are you popping Matthew Monagle right in his monocle? Or are you punching Tim Grierson in the ear, son?
God damn you. I'm rearing back my big old angry bear paw.
Yes.
I think McGonagall is going to get one up his chronicle.
Ouch. Yeah.
There's no promise. There's no promise for this. Know. YA no. adaption, this Breakfast Club meets Dream Warriors / fucking Marvel movie.
Fucking nailed it. Yeah, no, this is bad. Again, as I said, the feeling of neglect is palpable because this movie is just so confused. It feels like unfinished. But at the same time, I don't get the feeling that a few pickups or just small reshoots could have fixed this. The problems are elemental. Like, there is not a compelling story here.
Nope.
And they failed at doing what the entire movie is trying to do, which is just introduce these new mutants and make you care about them at all. My brother had it exactly right. It wants to be all these different things, and it's nothing. It is right. A big, fat nothing of a movie. Everything I like about this movie exists on a conceptual level. I like the idea of making a horror movie X-Men film. I like the idea of this like lesbian love story. There's all these queer allegories going on. I like the idea of the young mutants unable to control their power. I even like the idea of a giant demon bear with flaming eyes, but none of it actually works in practice. It all falls completely flat.
And I'll say this. This movie reminded me of, quite surprisingly, of The Long Good Friday, the Bob Hoskins gangster movie, because that's the day I watched it, and it felt like it was 9 hours long. It's the longest 95-minute movie of all time.
It is, because there's no story.
No.
There's no fucking story to it, so it just feels endless.
I mean, and this is the first movie where I was rooting for the CGI more than the humans, because I was like, that's the only interesting part. They finally got to the CGI action of it, and I'm okay. Like you said, I was interested in a Breakfast Club type New Mutants finding their powers. That's kind of cool. What would these kids go through if this was really real?
But you don't get any sense
of that. We don't get to know any of them beyond their backstory of their trauma, yes. What they did to get there.
A tortured process of getting those backstories, and they just go one by freaking one, right? Could be like, there's one guy who keeps being like, no, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. But it's like, it's just not your turn in the movie to talk about it. There's two other people who need to have long monologues about their backstories.
You also don't get any concept of, how long have these fucking kids been there? Like, we see Danny get there, and she's the new student, but then we have these get-to-know-each-other backstory conversations between kids who should know each other, should have heard these stories.
Right.
Or should they? I don't know. Did one get there the other day before?
Who knows?
The movie does not take any care to tell you that.
It's sloppy. It's just, again, it feels unfinished, but I mean, it basically is finished.
They made a movie. They knew it sucked. And then they just like released it when the whole world couldn't go out to see it.
It's like, oh, darn, can't see it. Ah. All right, let's get into the New Mutants. What is the build doing here? That got a little bad build stuff. We start with some narration. about an old Native American proverb. There are two bears in your soul. One is good and one is evil. And I will say, like, the problems with the movie and introducing these characters starts right away, especially when you think about it upon retrospect. We really needed a scene here with Danny before the film just throws you fucking into it.
Yeah.
We need a scene establishing her as a character and who her family is and what her world is. But we, boop, no, they just try to go, throw you right in the middle of all this chaos. Now, I'm not saying that scene would be well written or compellingly acted. There's no evidence of that here. But it feels necessary just for the sake of fucking coherence.
This movie is not interested in anything but these kids' trauma. That's it.
It really isn't. Just like setting up a bunch of character points that they think might pay off in like some sequel that will never, of course, be made. But yeah, they just throw you into it. Danny, who's our main character, basically wakes up and it's just like, ah, crazy shit's happening. Things are exploding. There's fire. People are on fire. We can tell she's in the snow somewhere. But there's literally like, they shot it in a way where there is no way to tell what the fuck is happening.
No.
Like, you have no idea what is happening. You're so disoriented right away, which is like mirroring her disorientation. But again, just for the sake of characters, we needed some orientation in her story and we don't get it. She even says what's happening because she's like experiencing it and has no idea.
And that would be fine if the story took it her point of view of like, I don't know what's happening. You got to figure it out. But it never takes pains to explain it later on. So you're still just kind of left wondering. Did Danny kill her whole reservation? that what happened?
She hides in a tree as all of this kind of chaos has happened. She's taken out to the forest by a family member, later revealed to be her father.
Right.
This is important stuff, as it turns out, when we get to the conclusion of the movie. But he, like, dies right in front of her. And then she's just running. Like, there's, like, no time to even register that. She's just running from something because, again, we can't see. There's a loud noise. She falls unconscious. And then, kaboosh! She wakes up chained to a bed.
We've all been there. Everybody's
been there.
We've all woken up chained to a bed somewhere with a camera on us.
And someone looking at you from an air vent above.
Are they, though? Oh, yeah. Someone looking at you from the air vent. But I meant from the camera. We get a few POV shots of the camera, but there are some times when the only other resident of that hospital is in a different room who's watching that camera. And the camera shots, all the cameras are mounted ceiling high, but the POV, when they give you the camera shots, they're all from like eye level. They're like on the ground.
It's so fucking sloppy. It really is. But we hear a voice. Danny is like, what the fuck is this shit? But we hear a voice on a comm. You're safe now. And this is Dr. Reyes, played by Alice Braga. Sonia Braga's daughter, of course.
Oh, we should say Danny's played by Blue Hunt, Sacramento represent.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Go Blue. Go Blue. I gotta say, Danny is a real dud of a character.
She's,
she's supposed to be mysterious throughout it, but she is bland. She is all types of bland. Which again is why you probably needed to like build some empathy in those opening scenes and you failed to do it. Now she's just in a fucking hospital. Who is she? I don't know. Doesn't matter. But yeah, Alice Braga comes in. I mean, this movie is like really kind of light on star power. Anya Taylor-Joy is probably the biggest star, and she wasn't that big of a star like 3 years ago, right?
Maisie Williams was hot. She was probably the most recognizable off of Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
They're not bad actors, though, except to be honest, Sacramento represent, I would say Blue is probably the worst. But they just can't handle accents. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, guess what? They all have accents. Like, they all do. They all have different fucking accents. It's hilarious. So, Dr. Reyes, Alice Boggle, she told her that she survived, or tells Danny that she survived a tornado, but Danny's like, what? There was a growling sound. And Dr. Reyes also reveals to Danny that she's a mutant.
Yep, she gives her the
and
talk.
And they need to discover her tree. Yeah, right. The mutant birds and the mutant bees. The bee birds and the bird bees. They need to discover her true nature. And this is like kind of part of the X-Men universe where like mutations generally don't pop up until puberty, which is, you know, of course, an amazing metaphor for
homosexuality,
human development, homosexuality, all
well, everything. It's been coded as homosexuality in like X-Men 3. Angel was the homosexual coded one.
Right, where it was like a conversion.
I like the thought of that every mutant parent sits their kid down at puberty about the birds, mutant birds and the bees. You'll notice some changes happening. Birds turn into bees. They can. Or bees can turn into super psionic powered birds.
You might turn into a bird bee. It's whatever. That's cool. Just go with it.
And it's beautiful. It's natural.
Absolutely. No, I mean, that's just like this movie has some good ideas. I mean, this whole idea of like this place as being almost like this like queer conversion therapy place.
For, right? Yeah.
It seems to be brought up. And then it's like, no.
No.
Dump that. Like, just dump it.
It's just... Damage Town is what it is.
It's just a little bit. Yeah, but basically, yeah, well, whatever, we'll get there. Dr. Reyes tells Danny, nothing can hurt you in here, but we quickly see that they're being monitored at all times. There's cameras everywhere. There's a bank of TVs somewhere that...
There's really no twists and turns. It's pretty upfront. Dr. Reyes is sinister pretty much from the start.
Yeah.
And the twist, if there is one, I think you get it right away, right? Once Danny shows up, everything starts going haywire for everybody else.
Right.
One scene at a time. We always get, that's what this so formulaic. We get the one person alone scene after we hear about their trauma. We get them alone. It cuts back to the camera with Danny having a nightmare. And then the person goes through some fucking crazy shit.
Yeah. Well, the order is usually that they'll have a vision. Well, they'll make an allusion to their past trauma. Then they'll have the vision alone. Uh-huh. Then they'll share their backstory, right? There's this whole midsection of sharing the backstories that is like, it goes on fucking forever. Because again, there's no story in there whatsoever. And story is necessary. It's a necessary thing.
And I keep saying Breakfast Club, but I think there are definite deliberate Breakfast Club allusions in this.
There abso-freaking-lutely is, yeah. When
Rain is crawling through the vent, I'm like, that's Bender going back to the closet. Huh?
Absolutely. Well, how about the whole dancing scene?
The dancing scene? And that then they do the makeover scene for Ally Sheedy, which I don't think she needed. You also had the Kentucky kid was obviously the Anthony Michael Hall kid who didn't hook up with anybody.
No, right? Yeah, so Danny immediately just gets plopped into group therapy with this ragtag Renaissance man group of mutant washouts.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just... What this movie wants to be is kind of obvious, but other than it just sort of like makes its ambitions clear, but then doesn't do anything to really follow through on them. It wants to be the Breakfast Club goes to a haunted house in the X-Men universe.
Dream Warriors. Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, that's all it is. But, like, it just doesn't do it. It doesn't commit to any of those fucking
things. It's not our format. What we do is we go, like you say, I love when you say we painstakingly go through these movies. It's true. And it's the way we should. This movie almost doesn't even warrant it because it's so not like a plot. It's just this collection of the same scene happening.
I will say this was like the least amount of notes I've taken in a long time. There's just nothing to talk about here. So yeah, group therapy, which again starts this sort of tiresome unspooling of backstories. They each elucidate this sort of trauma in the past. And it's basically they've all hurt somebody because they didn't understand their powers and they couldn't control their powers at the time. And people were hurt, and they're sort of now they're in this sort of purgatory kind of a situation, right? They're all kind of on the run, too, possibly. Yeah. Like they might all be fugitives as well. And in there, there's a fire guy, there is an exploding guy, there's a magic girl, there's a werewolf girl, and there's Danny. And that's pretty much it. Anya Taylor-Joy, again, probably one of the most recognizable people in the movie. She's Ilyana Rasputin. She's blonde. She's bitchy. Is she Russian? Well, you couldn't really tell by the voice.
She's sassy. How about
the name Ilyana Rasputin?
She walks with a switch and throws her shoulders and says very, very pop culture reference quips at people.
Yes, so it's very quippy. Really not a well-written movie.
No.
At all. There's no good lines of dialogue. That's, I think, why I didn't take any notes. There's nothing to write down. Like, there's no memorable good or bad lines of dialogue in this movie. So Ilyana is tasked with showing Danny around. She goads Danny into saying, like, just take a run off the property.
Yeah.
Gates open, run. So Danny does it. A wolf runs in as well. And Danny slams into an invisible force field that is surrounding the property.
Now, for that force field being invisible, I sure saw it coming for miles and miles away. I'm surprised Danny did not.
Right.
And you know what Danny should learn now? bad things happen when you run. Don't run.
Yeah. It's slow down.
In 15 minutes of movie time, you've ran twice. Your dad got killed. And you ended up handcuffed to bed. Now you got a bloody nose.
Oh, my God. Yes.
I mean, at least the last 20 years of my life, I've lived that ethos. Do not run ever. Exercise is bad.
Served me well. Yeah. So again, oh, this movie is a mess. It already starts going into flashbacks. like, remember this thing from like literally 5 minutes ago? Like, I do. I really do. I didn't need that like hammered home at all. That Danny was like in a snowstorm and like people died. Kind of got that already. And then our lead character climbs to the top of a church clock tower that is on the site of this mental hospital. It's huge. Like, it's bigger than the hospital. And is prepared to commit suicide. Again, we're like 15 minutes into the fucking movie. We've had flashbacks and now a suicide attempt by our protagonist. But another student who we met earlier when she and Danny made eyes at each other. This is Rain, made by Maisie Williams from Game of Thrones. She just pops her head out. Like, she's just there like, hey, don't kill yourself.
Hey.
She just talks Danny down. Danny says she wants to be with her family, but Rain is kind of like, you know, I'll be your family. I'm here with you.
And she keeps, like, you're not supposed to know her power yet, but she's like, I can smell your fear. Do you have any treats?
I know. And we also just saw a wolf show up out of nowhere. Is there? So it's like, be real subtle about this. Yeah, this movie is just hilariously unsubtle about, like, the kind of everything, I guess. But, like, Rain's lesbianism is just hilarious. Oh. Like, every time they want to reinforce it, they're like, have her watch a scene from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is super on the nose, guys.
Girls, have her sit wrapped in front of a TV where women are kissing.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So, Rain talks Danny down off of the ledge, literally talks her down off the ledge. They go back to Danny's room, and they find they're not supposed to be in each other's room. So, again, there's, like, this kind of, like, queer conversion therapy sort of metaphor going on, right? Like, they're not controlling their impulses. They're not controlling their sexuality or whatever. Rain even says, follow the treatment. Follow the treatment. Yeah. You'll get through this.
You know? And meanwhile, like, Dr. Reyes is constantly reassuring you're safe. You're not going to be hurt. We'll protect you. And then, like, you see their rooms. They're all just, like, drab, psych ward, shut and locked with a camera trained on you.
Like, it looks really upsetting. Like, there's no way that this is
safe. No way are we going to soften this up. There's no pictures of, like, a sunset or anything like that.
So, Sam, this is Charlie Heaton.
This is Kentucky.
This is Kentucky. This is the brother from Stranger Things, Charlie Heaton. He has a vision. So this is the first of, like, these visions that start happening. Danny is making them have these visions. He has a vision of men with pickaxes. He sees his dad. There's a huge blast of energy. And then just, ooh, whoa, whatever. That was not, I mean, it wasn't anything. Whatever, it's dumb. This movie was kind of obviously, I think, influenced by the success of It.
Mm-hmm.
Even the way that it just one by one by one goes through these visions, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, this character gets a vision, you get a vision, you got a vision, you're no mutant. So again, if this movie was being too subtle about this burgeoning lesbian relationship between Rain and Danny, they take a shower together.
Yeah, now it's caged heat all of a sudden. Fucking bullying in the girl showers.
We see that Rain has a brand on her and has a W brand.
Danny does not pick up on cues because she's like a big W on her shoulder. And you heard the witch story. You heard her in therapy talk about being branded as a witch, literally branded as a witch. What's the W for?
That's a cool tattoo.
West Side, Danny? Washington.
Get over yourself, Danny. Come on. Sam. Also, like, we see him hitting himself at one point, and he seems to be kind of torturing something. They all have this, like, guilt-ridden, traumatized, suicidal kind of backstories, right? They're all racked with guilt about this thing they've done. They've all, like, are kind of self-loathing or suicidal. I mean, that's, again, that's all this movie, as you alluded, that's all this movie gives a shit about is, like, how fucked up they are.
It's like, you know that movie Sucker Punch, that really awful movie Sucker Punch?
Yeah.
That's what this movie wants to be.
Yeah. and still fall short.
more sapphic, I think, than Sucker yes. Punch.
So Danny and Ileana, remember, they got a little bit of a fight. They got a feud going. And all of a sudden, during the feud, Ileana produces a CGI laser sword of some type, a blue laser sword, which nullifies something we learn later in the film,
mm-hmm.
which is that she has to go to another dimension to produce this magic sword. Yeah. And yet in the scene, she just whips out a magic sword. No fucking problem whatsoever.
Okay, so when you were talking about how this movie's really not subtle, it's not in showing, but it doesn't tell. Like, what the fuck are Ileana's powers? Like, we know she can hop back and forth between this dimension. Why she can't hop from that dimension to, like, say, New York? I don't know.
Why can't she just go? She can hop between dimensions.
But there's no rules of, like, what is that sword? What is that arm thing that keeps coming out? I know she's supposed to be related to Colossus
yeah.
in some way. But why is she so fucking powerful? Who's Lockheed?
No, right? It's just frustrating because it's sort of like in this scene, they basically like show you her powers and then in later scenes put limitations on her powers that mm-hmm. did not exist in the scene where you showed her power. It's just that's how sloppy this
is. At this point, I wrote the movie is taking a long time to do nothing.
We were quite bored. There were many like heavy sighs while we were watching this movie. Just like, another scene where they're sitting around talking about their backstories. So now we get Ileana. She has this kind of childhood. Remember, we get the illusion first, and then we get the vision, and then we get the explanation. So the illusion is that she's had some trauma in her past, and now so here's the vision, which is this childhood memory of her as a little girl being exploited, sexually exploited by men in these smiley masks,
yeah.
these like Watchmen style smiley
kind
masks.
Kind of Slenderman, very yeah. internet horror.
Absolutely. And this is all happening while Danny is kind of sleeping and kind of emitting this power, which they still don't know what Danny's power is. But,
but somehow the camera can read her powers, like her psionic levels. The camera does that. Who's reading that? We don't know. Doesn't show us. Doesn't tell us.
No. Dr. Reyes kind of explains the movie's metaphor a little bit, the metaphor that it eventually just completely abandons to and contradicts in every way, which is this idea that these new mutants, are especially dangerous because they don't know what their power is. Like a baby rattlesnake can't control the amount of venom it gives out, so it's the baby rattlesnakes are more dangerous than the adult rattlesnakes, and that's why they're all so dangerous, but it's like, boy, you really just toss that away at the end. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't go anywhere with it. Like, okay, neat idea. Great. Wish it paid off in any fucking way in this movie, but it just doesn't.
Right.
So instead, we get Rain. So remember, we've had the illusion to her trauma. So now we get the vision of trauma, which is, again, in the shower. And this time a priest, the bloody priest who she slashed up as a small child and who whipped her, whips her in the shower and actually does whip her. Like the visions are now starting to actually
he brands her again.
Manifests. Yes, exactly. So, wow, pretty heavy stuff, right? So let's sneak off to the attic and play Truth or Dare. The attic? There's an attic. Because they're all fucking buddies now.
Yeah.
Ileana had a fucking sword to this girl's neck like 2 seconds ago, and now they're all just like, you want to hang out?
Also, Ileana drugged Dr. Reyes somehow because her locked solitary room has drugs in it that she can hide.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah, so they sneak off to the attic. They play Truth or Dare with a real lie detector. Some more kind of backstory exchanges. The doctor is monitoring them the whole time. And then we get the Bastards of Young as a dance scene, this Breakfast Club style dancing as the drugged doctor sleeps. I mean, the movie is just all, it can't make a call on like what tone it wants mm-hmm. from scene to scene, what the character dynamics are from scene to scene. And again, there's just no story to kind of push anything forward. Ugh. We do find out the kids kind of assume that this Reyes talks about a superior, her superior, and what he wants. And the kids kind of assume the superior is Dr. X, right? They're all going to be X-Men. How fucking dumb are these kids? Like, what the fuck? You think he's going to put you in a fucking abandoned mental hospital?
Professor X really tortures kids before he brings them on his X-Men.
He's got a whole thing about watching them, too. You're all really excited to be X-Men with this pederast, right?
So he should know about this place, right? Because if Cerebro is a thing in this universe, how does he not know about this place?
Don't even, man. That's a whole... That is a thread you do not want to start pulling. Now there's like this pairing off going on, right? So now it's like, again, we're into like the young adult romance. We're into the Fault in Our Stars kind of moment of damaged kids falling in love.
Or the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, you know, the guards have all gotten drunk and Billy Bibbit's snuck off with one. Sorry, that's not a very apt comparison, I don't think. Although just as tragic.
And just as good. Danny and Rain sneak out to a cemetery that is on the grounds.
How fucking cornball.
There's a red flag. But of course they go to a cemetery together. And they're flirting. Meanwhile, Roberto, he's the Brazilian flame guy, and Ileana swim together.
Mm-hmm.
The swimming pool, that's there for some reason. Danny and Rain kiss. It's kind of a nice little moment between them, but it's also just like, you know, it's kind of eye rolling, but it's just sort of like,
yeah,
I guess nice to see in a movie of this type and size, but again, in practice,
Some of the dialogue in this movie, this doesn't feel real. Sometimes I think you're not real.
Sometimes I feel like I made you up. Oh my God. Ileana and Roberto kiss, but he gets too hot. Because if you haven't figured it out by now, he's a flame guy.
There's a part here where he explains, so this is his reveal part, and he explains how he burned his girlfriend alive because he got too hot. And Ileana immediately goes, "Hey, you can't hurt me, but you have to chase me," and swims away. I'm like, a typical stuck-up girl just makes everything about herself. Like, this guy just poured out his heart about how he murdered his girlfriend. Chase me!
And she actually just runs off. As it turns out, when he stays and has a vision of his burned girlfriend, and when they come back, Roberto is in flames.
His power is pretty lame, too. It really is. Dr. Ray just pushes him in the pool with a thing.
And he's fine.
Do his clothes get burned up every time?
Yeah, right.
So after every fight, he's walking around naked.
None of these New Mutants are, as you alluded in your opening. They're not new at all. They're just versions of the same old thing, right? Or of other characters from other comic books.
Ileana perhaps is the newest because we don't know quite what the fuck her powers are.
What is she? Yes. boy.
But yeah, Cannonball is Speedball or Juggernaut. Don't they already have one called Firestorm? I don't know. It's so ridiculous.
It really is.
He can't even fly.
So Danny now bonds with Ileana, who starts monologuing about her backstory. Because remember, we've seen the illusion, and then we got the vision, and now we get the explanation. So they bond together. We get some computer analysis back from Reyes's superior, who says that Danny needs to be terminated, which we find out is the Essex Corporation, which, if you follow X-Men, means something to. If you don't, who gives a shit? I should just say right now, I know all of these are like based on like actual characters and actual things that are in the comic book, and I don't know how it is the same or really how it is different or anything like that. I don't follow comic books, so I don't have that level of like, I see Essex Corporation and I get a little tingle of like, ooh, okay, right. I get that. That said, I also didn't know shit about Magneto or Dr. X or Wolverine in 2000 when I saw the first X-Men movie, because I just don't follow comic books, and I didn't have a problem connecting with those characters.
No. Exactly.
You know what I mean? That's not the issue here. I just want to say that's not the issue.
And that opening is bad. I love that you brought up Magneto. That opening with a child being taken away by Nazis in camps. And
that trauma instantly manifesting itself in a horrible power that will be exploited over. I mean, yes. Yes.
Exactly.
You're instantly like feeling it. You're feeling the pull.
You
the
showed,
good, the evil. You
told,
see it all.
And we get it. This is just, it wants to be a horror movie, but it doesn't, it wants to be a PG-13 horror movie. It wants to be a Marvel movie, but it wants to be kind of a tame YA Marvel movie.
Yeah. So Reyes remember, she has her orders now to terminate Danny. So she acts like they're going to do more hypnosis, but really she puts Danny under, tells her that she's doing it as she's doing it too. Bad idea from everything you've learned right. about Danny. So
she monologues. Fucking
she just monologues.
Watch The Incredibles. Going.
So as this happened, Danny's stress causes more childhood nightmares to come to life. So all these smiley face men who Ileana had this vision of from her childhood now attack them, and under their masks, they have ridiculous CGI monster faces. So, of course, they have like 10,000 CGI teeth. They just make loud screeching noises, and even though there's tons of them and they can chomp your head off at any time, they are never a real threat. Which, to me, it's contemporary blockbuster cinema in a fucking nutshell, which is just this CGI thing that should be able to eviscerate you in a half second that is not threatening at all. And doesn't feel tactile or real. Oh, this is quite an annoying.
They are very aggressively threatening though, because they're dressed like Manny from 365 Days or whatever the guy's name was. they're just so Euro trash.
No, they're more icky than anything, because they always just kind of sidle. You're like, why don't you chomp their head off with your giant fucking teeth?
And no, like,
oh, I'm sidling.
They'd rather just say, where are you going, baby girl? Are you lost, baby girl?
So looks like Danny is done for, but Rain, who we find out earlier in the movie that Rain can just go through the vents at any time.
Right.
And not be watched and not be tracked and not be known about and can get anywhere in the hospital, inside or outside any building. Through air vents, which again are big enough to just walk around in, because of how much room air needs to circulate.
This was the big flaw in the SX Corporation's plan, was they only staffed that place with one doctor. You have five. Right? You don't know their powers. That's the whole premise. You don't know how strong these kids are. You put any one backup? Doctor in there.
Some security? Something? Some people posted outside the force field just in case? Nah. We got a fucking $1 trillion international corporation to run here.
I just want to see Dr. Reyes on her like yearly evaluation. Just be like, can I get one assistant?
Part-time, I'm doing phlebotomy. Intern, I'm doing anything.
I don't know how to work these cameras.
But Rain jumps through the vents just in time, saves Danny, slashes the living shit out of Dr. Reyes, who kind of slumps away. And meanwhile, while this is happening, the New Mutants come together, and with their powers, they fight the monsters. I mean, you didn't see that coming. Ileana laser swords all the monsters, and everyone's fine.
Well, see, okay, so this was the one moment in this movie that I thought was actually kind of cool, and it kind of built for me at the end. I was like, at least something is happening, and there's some kind of path. But when Dr. Reyes gets that kind of Deep Blue Sea moment where the bear just surprisingly eats her, I was like, that's fucking cool. Good.
Yeah. Suddenly, after they fight off the chompy head Palos, suddenly they all have the evil plan all figured out. This thing that seemed like really obvious from the entire time. Not only do they have the obvious part figured out, they have all the non-obvious stuff figured out, too. They know who's behind it. They just like go through files. They've got all the files. They're just like, oh, you know the evil plan now. And they just decide, hey, we're a team.
Except for Roberto. He kind of, he's just a chicken shit. Like, he hides. Bit. He hides as long as he can.
So now they're going to search for the doctor, because she's still out there somewhere. The bloody doctor kind of draws them in. And then monologues for a while. And while they're sitting there very, for some reason, patiently listening to this monologue, she bubbles them. Bubble. Force field bubble. So they're all in the bubble. And it looks like Danny's going down. Danny's not long for this world, but oh, what's that noise? Kaboosh crash! And like I said, the Deep Blue Sea moment, the giant bear, the demon bear, comes in and snatches her away in its giant maw.
That's a big bear.
It's a big bear. It's a fear bear. Mm. It's a bear that is caused by your fear, and that is symbolic of your fear. It's fucking dumb. This movie does not give a shit about any of this shit. It just is like, put on a giant CGI monster for them to fight, because now we're back on like some kind of familiar Marvel fucking ground.
Exactly. Here,
which is like a completely like stakesless fight between like CGI people and a CGI something.
But it needed it. It needed something.
It did need something. It needed a fucking story. It needed for this to actually like build to something and not just become this thing. Again, this just like talks to how.
Was this the bear?
Completely confused this movie. Yes, of course it was. It's the fear bear. She's got a fear bear.
So Danny did kill her entire reservation.
Absolutely, she did.
Okay.
Absolutely. So yeah, the bear crashes through the wall, chomps up Reyes. Ilyana goes to her magic place and comes back with a laser sword, and her purple dragon Lockheed, which was a stuffed animal throughout this entire time, comes to life. This is my wife's favorite part of the movie, was the purple dragon coming to life.
Well, yeah. But also Ilyana's netherworld comes to the place too, because it starts flashing. Like, did you catch that? It's a, what we don't, it's so unexplained what is happening with her powers.
Exactly. And she has to go to her magic place to come back with her magic sword, which instantly manifested itself earlier when she was like angry at Danny. And she gets her line, which her name is Magic, right? That's the name of the character, her X-Men name, Magic with a K. So she even gets her line, which says, "I'm Magic." Which,
oh, really?
Again,
I didn't know that.
If you have watched, again, maybe this means something more to people who have seen the comics because they get that kind of tingly moment of like, ooh, she is magic too. She really is. And not everybody is getting that. But it's like, that'll make this movie good. No. I'm sorry. That does not make a bad thing good. It just is just not good. So anyway, they all fight the bear together using their powers, which they can all control now, even though the entire conceit of this movie was that they can't. So moving on. Danny, throughout this entire fight, is completely comatose. She's back in the snowy forest hiding in a tree. I mean, again, what the fuck is this movie? Her father, who is played by Adam Beach, too good for this bullshit, pops in and basically tells her, hey, Danny, quit fucking around in like this snowy universe. You're obviously the only person who could stop the fear bear from killing everyone. So... And again, this is the emotional payoff of the movie, and this is why you needed even a goddamn 30-second scene of these two together in the first act of the movie. This is the emotional payoff, and it's hollow. It's completely hollow. Danny just wakes up and is like, hey, bear, come on. Don't do it. Tames the bear, tells it to sleep, and the bear sleeps, ironically, because I was the one who felt drowsy. So... And all of the new mutants who were just stepped on by the giant bear and thrown through walls, they are fine now because that was also their power, was surviving getting stepped on and thrown through walls.
Yeah, when he gets smushed, he's just laying there in like a big bear print. Smushed. Like, he's
like a 300-foot tall bear.
He's not a flame. He should have no... But he's like, yep, all right, I'm just naked. I'm good.
I'm good. And Explodey... What was his name? Cannonball?
Cannonball.
He earlier has a cast on his arm. Like, he can get hurt.
Yeah.
He can get hurt. They can all get hurt. And then all of a sudden, it's like, no, we can't get hurt.
Interesting thing about Cannonball, he breaks his arms, he damages his eyes. His clothes never messed up.
Never. Nah, it's all not good. Not even a scuff. So everyone's fine. And now it's the next morning, and they're all just sifting through the rubble of their this old hospital and smiling. And they just say, let's go find the nearest town, and they leave. And then Danny's narration returns with the two bears. She kind of finishes the two bears story, and the end of the punchline, I guess, if you will, of it is, whichever bear is the largest or whichever bear wins in the fight between the two bears is the one that you feed, which is a great message that has nothing to do with this movie. It has nothing to do with the showdown that we just watched. You know, like there's... It has nothing to do with anything. It's just like, let's just tie that bow from the opening seconds of the movie. But why? It's not wrapped around anything related to it. And that's your movie. That is your movie. It just ends on basically a non sequitur. That also explains everything.
It's a non sequitur that's supposed to explain and yet doesn't. And I thought it was really bold of this movie not to make a Goldilocks and the Three Bear references about feeding bears, because... Earlier, Ilyana says, lions and tigers, after saying, hey, Yogi, she then says, sassily, lions and tigers and bears, oh my. Like, let's just throw every bear reference we know in. You know, like, you can't start forest fires, or only you can prevent them. Just every bear reference. So is her dad the good bear?
That's what I'm saying, is like, what's the good bear, right? Like, yeah. Doesn't it make more sense if instead of Danny just telling the bad bear to go to sleep and go away, that a good bear, the good bear, because it's all about these two bears that are fighting each other. That's the central metaphor, is that you have the good bear and the bad bear. They're constantly at war with each other. And who wins? The one that you feed. But it's like, no, the one that loses is the one that you just wake up from a vision and tell to go away.
Yeah, you've literally only fed the fear bear the entire movie. And then just said, nah, shut up.
Get out of here. But yeah, but it's obvious that the kind of fit to that was that the good bear comes. The good bear overwhelms the large bear, wipes its, tells it to get the fuck out of here. And the good bear is the one that takes supremacy inside of Danny. But no, Danny just tells it to go away, and then it goes away. And then what's the fucking, I mean, oh, Jesus Christ. So that's your movie. That's the
Where do the mutants come from? I want the old mutants, and you replace them with new mutants.
So, Corky, let's. Yeah. Any final thoughts before we give a rating in this film?
An unbelievably boring 90-minute movie.
Yeah. So our ratings, just to remind everyone, run-of-the-mill bad film is a dare, next-level bad, double dare, and a movie we actually like, reverse dare. Corky, your rating for the little mutants.
There's some sketches of a movie that could have been good in here. Some kind of exploration of mutants coming of age, discovering powers. I like lesbian leads. That's something you don't get to see, because it doesn't treat it as anything different. It just, that's just what these kids are. They're finding themselves that way too.
Absolutely.
And that was great. They're even the kind of, I like seeing, as someone who actually is a fan of Marvel movies or of superhero movies, I actually like to kind of see an exploration of a character whose powers don't manifest themselves in like power or something tangible. I'm talking about Danny specifically.
Yeah.
More of a psychological power. I was interested in seeing that explored, but it's not. You don't know anything about these kids aside from their trauma and what they can do by the end. So it's so much left on the table, and it's done in a very slow, boring way. That said, I didn't hate the look of it, especially at the end. I thought the CGI worked pretty good. You can tell that they spent some money on it. I'll give it a dare. But it's a very low dare. Don't watch. You don't ever have to see this movie if you're a Marvel completist.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say only Marvel completists need to watch this movie. A dare for me, also a low dare. Just as I said at the top of the show, I like the ideas that are in this movie. Great idea to kind of take a superhero movie and try to do something a little bit different with it. Make it a horror movie, make it a more claustrophobic, character-driven kind of experience. But it both doesn't really do that, and then also completely subverts and tosses away that idea by the end by having basically your traditional CGI on CGI showdown at the end. So not unwatchable. Again, like the ideas, like some of the stuff going on, but it just doesn't come across in practice. So again, it's not quite a double dare. It's not unwatchable, but I got to say it's a really low dare.
I'm going to say I know you're not really a fan, but after what I thought was a pretty cool start to the X-Men universe, they have just fucking shit the bed.
Haven't they though? Yeah. And again, it's because like there are really, and I think in the first couple of X-Men movies that came out in the early 2000s, like all of the like really cool ideas about the X-Men kind of come through.
Mm-hmm.
And in the later movies, that's kind of just window dressing, you know, and that's what it is in this movie too. These sort of ideas about like their mutation as a metaphor for sexuality or as a metaphor for some kind of psychological trauma. It doesn't really get into it. It's just window dressing followed by a big CGI blowout at the end. It just never commits to anything. And this movie, like the most recent X-Men movies too, has a lot of really stupid pop culture references.
Right.
It's not explicitly labeled as like 70s or 80s or anything like that. But I think it was supposed to be an 80s universe or a 90s universe, kind of playing off of the most recent other X-Men Apocalypse that was set in the 80s.
That makes sense. Okay, I see what you're saying. That makes sense now.
I think they also just cheap the fuck out on it, too.
Yeah, they just cover their bases.
Yeah. Could be 80s, could be 2010s. Who knows?
Are they wearing those clothes ironically? Right? Or is it really in fashion? All right, that's all we have for you on this episode of Dare Daniel, but we'll be back in 2 weeks to review another one of your movie dares. Thank you for this one, Matthew Barnes.
Thank you, Matthew, and thank you for all the donations over the last several years. And thank you to everyone who's been listening as we are heading into year four of the Dare Daniel podcast. But until next episode, send your most sadistic or altruistic movie dares to us at daredaniel.com. Be sure to follow Dare Daniel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Of course, you can also donate to the show by going to daredaniel.com. Like and rate us on all of your favorite podcast apps. You can read more of my movie reviews on the Dare Daniel website at daredaniel.com. Corky, where will you and your fear bear be doing your fear bear shit?
Fear
bear.
You can find me at the Medfield State Hospital for mutants in late puberty, because none of these kids are just going through puberty.
Right. It's like everyone's in their mid-20s.
You can find me at the Medfield State Hospital for new mutants. And we'll all just be exploring everybody's powers and probably threatening somebody in the showers.
That sounds fantastic. I can't wait. For Dare Daniel, I'm Daniel Mulmuth Barnes.
And I'm Corky McDonald saying, inside all of us have lived two bears, one named Daniel, one named Corky.
And they're going to fight. Or nope, they're not. Never mind.
Definitely going to go to sleep.
Someone's going to sleep. Bye, everyone.